Hello, this is Dr. Shiva. Welcome to our podcast, Get Educated or Be Enslaved.
Episode 1416, air date April 1st, 2024.
Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Shiva Iyadure. Today, I'm going to be having a discussion with interviewer Ido Farina out of Greece, who's very interested in my work beyond email and the work we're doing currently with Cytosolve, as well as Systems Health to revolutionize medicine. That's what we're going to start with today. And I'm going to do that interview with Ido Farina, and I hope you enjoy it. I think it'll really give you a understanding from a perspective of truth, freedom, and health, what we're doing to actually deliver solutions to people to advance health. Hello, everyone. It's Dr. Shiva Iyadure. Today, I'm going to be doing an interview with. So we're going to have
the market down. They're going to have to force new liquidity into the system.
We're going to have an interview with Ido Farina, who's joining us. He's a big crypto guy. He's very interested in the work we're doing. Ido, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Dr. Shiva. How are you doing today?
Good. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing great, by the way. This is Versan. We have been doing live streamings since a couple of months ago. He's also one of my favorite persons in the crypto space. We are very good friends.
All
right. Morning, Dr. Shiva. It's truly an honor to have the opportunity to speak with you.
And where are you out of, Versan?
Houston, Texas.
Oh, okay. And Ido, you're out of Greece, right?
Yeah, I'm still in Greece, Dr. Shiva.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I shared with people that we're going to talk about the digital stuff that we're doing in medicine, and we can take it from, you know, all different perspectives from there, the work we're doing with Cytosol, which is really a decentralized platform for doing medical research, which eliminates the need for animal testing. So there may be some crossover in the work we're doing in Systems Health. So I don't know where we want to start, but we can start anywhere you want.
Yeah, I sent some topics also. I want you to give some introduction of yourself. I know a lot of our viewers, when I comment with them that we might have you, they were commenting that they were excited. So many of them already know you, but some of them, I think they need some introduction. You know, I sent for Hitter. I don't know if I pronounced her name correctly, but some topics that I can be asking. Just let me open here the topics so I can tell you. Not sure if you have seen them.
I did. I saw some of them. Yeah. So we can go through them, but I think it'll sort of flow nicely between what we discuss with all the different areas that we want to cover, I think, today.
Yeah, we can touch on all of that.
Yeah.
So when you guys are ready, I can tap go live.
Yeah, I'm good. Let's go.
By the way, I invited also James. You know, you have met him in our previous live streaming, but
yeah.
I don't think he saw it for some reason. So there's a chance he will join us, but I don't really know.
All right, good.
Yeah, so just let me change a bit my position.
Yeah.
Okay. You ready, Versan? Yeah?
Yeah. Looking forward to it. It's going to be fun.
Thank you again, Dr. Shiva. Very excited. Always to have you.
Good to be here.
So 3, 2, 1, okay. And I tap go live.
Oh, shit. And
we are live. Welcome, everyone. We have a very special guest today, Dr. Shiva, which happens to be the inventor of email. So such an honor to have you, Dr. Shiva, again on the show. It's the second time we're having a conversation, first time together with Versan. So I would like to give the opportunity for you to introduce yourself. I know a lot of people from our audience already know you, but would love to hear from your own words if you can give a brief introduction of who are you, what have you been doing, and what is your main focus for the next years? So please go ahead, Dr. Shiva.
Yeah, and can I share on your side some screenshots and stuff or no?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay, good. So, well, welcome everyone. This is Dr. Shivaya Dure. Number one, just to give everyone up to date, people should know that I'm running for president of the United States as a independent candidate, as a truly independent candidate, not like Booby Kennedy, who essentially is still part of the swarm. It's very important for people to understand because those in power have gotten very, very sophisticated in how they manipulate people. So there's the obvious establishment. You can put whatever name you want, the Clintons and the Bushes, but the not so obvious establishment is what a lot of people are not willing to break from. It's almost like slaves, they want to remain on the plantation to think that the plantation owner is going to resolve their problems. And so you have Trump, you have Kennedy, and you go down the list, Tulsi Gabbard. These people are still part of the swarm. It's very, very difficult, or people are too lazy not to want to understand this because it's very, very convenient for them to stay on the plantation. All right? So that's one thing people need to understand. But Ido and Versan, the understanding that led me to a lot of this goes back to my own journey. Everyone has their own journey. It's hard for me to understand your particular journey, but if you can take a moment to sort of walk through the life that I went through that, you know, brought me to this, is that, you know, I grew up in India in the you know, early 60s. In Bombay, India, which has a caste system, and it still does. You know, people in India don't want to talk about this, where you have a system that was originally for people that was based on meritocracy, and then it became a system that was based on your birth lottery. So that's called the Indian caste system. So by all accord in that caste system, wherever you were born, you were supposed to only do that job the rest of your lives, right? But people fought against these things. My parents were one of those people and were very fortunate to get out of that. But it's also a mentality, right? Some people may be out of that system, but mentally they're still part of that. So when I came to the United States, Ido and Versan, I was very, very committed. And I never forgot my great grandparents who worked very hard. That environment that I came in, I moved to New Jersey in the early 70s, 1970. And I grew up with hardworking immigrants, you know, all around us. So I had a deep, deep appreciation for hard work. So by the time I was 14, because I was very, you know, enamored with math and science, but also in sports, I got the opportunity to go to what was called New York University in a special program where 40 students out of the entire United States and were selected to learn computer science. So you have to understand, this is 19... let me see. I think I can. This I'm going to share a couple of screens here. So this is 1970 at that time, and you know a computer in those days was a very, very large mainframe. Okay, and you know most of your iPhones today have far more computing power. I think I'm sharing that. Yeah, most of the iPhones today have far more computing power than 10 of 20, 100 of those large mainframes. So if you go to theinventorofemail.com, we've documented all that, but I went through that journey where I learned computer science, you know, 8 different programming languages in a very intensive program. And then after I finished that, I got a full-time job, even though I was in high school, because of my interest in medicine. Because see, when I grew up in India, not only did I grow up in this caste system, but my grandmother was a traditional healer. A lot of people talk about alternative medicine, but I was deeply interested in how my grandmother, who had very little, no degrees, was able to apply these ancient systems of Indian ideas and medicine to heal people. So when I started working in that medical school, I thought I'd be able to do medical research, and I did. I did research on understanding why babies were dying in their sleep. But the other thing I ended up doing, if you go to Inventor of Email, it has a whole history. I ended up creating the first email system. A lot of people don't know that you don't need the internet for email. In the early days, email was essentially a interoffice or mail. The interoffice mail system was an inner office application. It was all done by paper, okay? Meaning that people would be in these individual decentralized offices, and the secretary was a actual human being, typically a woman, and she would write these memos. The memo had a particular structure: to, from, subject, CC, right, BCC. And these memos were written on a typewriter, put into envelopes, and then put it through these pneumatic tubes. And they were sent all over the office, right? And I was asked to convert that entire, the key word there is system. I was asked to convert that entire system to the electronic version. And I wrote that in 50,000 lines of code. Every feature that you see in what we today call email. In fact, I not only did I invent that system, but I also named it email, right? Which was a term never used before in the English language, okay? So I called that system email, created email as we know today with all those features as people know. And so if you go through this, this is, if you go to whoinventedemail.com, it has all of that, but you can see there are these pneumatic tubes, right? So this was the paper-based version of email. Did this in 50,000 lines of code in less than 8 megabytes of memory. Had to write all the memory swapping, but email was basically a decentralized system for office communication. Now, when the internet came in 1993, or the web, email became a consumer application, okay? And after it became a consumer application, my second foray into email was I was doing my PhD work at MIT, and I was very much into what you would call, today you would call the field of AI. In those days, we called it cybernetics. And I was developing a whole range of different algorithms and technologies to automatically analyze many different kinds of patterns, faces, ultrasonic signals, handwriting, documents. And in the middle of that, I was asked to help the White House in a contest that they ran to automatically read and route the president's email. They ran a contest. I ended up winning that. Left MIT in the middle of my PhD and started another company called Echo Mail. Echo Mail has still three of the most important patents for automatic analysis of content, figuring it out and responding to it. Very much like ChatGPT, which is actually violating a lot of our patents, okay? So this field of AI, you know, I participated in that, created a very large company called Echo Mail. And then in 2003, I headed back to MIT, just randomly wanting to meet with one of my professors about something else. And he said, Shiva, you should come back to MIT. Medicine, Western medicine, is recognizing that they know very little about the human body. What had occurred was in 2003, the Human Genome Project had ended. And when the Human Genome Project ended, what we uncovered was that we have the same number of genes as a worm. This is quite fascinating, actually, because we went into the Genome Project thinking that what made a human being different than a worm was the number of genes, okay? So biologists had a very, very mistaken notion of complexity. They thought more parts, more complexity. You see what I'm saying? Like if I gave Ido 1,000 Lego blocks and I gave Versan 10 Lego blocks, you know, Lego pieces, people would think that Ido is always going to create more complex structures. It could be that Versan connects those Lego pieces in very complex ways, even though there's 10 of them. And Ido may just take the 1,000 Lego pieces and connect them one after the other in a very linear structure, you see? So the number of parts does not mean complexity. But because many people don't have a systems approach to looking at the world, they immediately think more means complex. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So biology had made this significant mistake that they thought more parts, more complexity. It turns out we have the same number of genes as a worm. Okay, wow. Quite fascinating. We have 20,000 genes. So what makes a worm different than a human being is that the genes create proteins, the proteins interact with other proteins, and in fact, back with the genes, but in much more complex molecular interactions known as molecular pathways, right? So you have more different kinds of reactions we do than a worm does. So it's the interconnections. So that led to a field called systems biology. That was in 2003. And systems biology said, wow, we need to now move out of the nucleus to look at the whole cell and how all these things interconnect, right? And so I came back to MIT, had someone run my company, because to me, this was fascinating. My advisor said, look, you created email, you love medicine. So I came back at the age of, I think, 41 or something, and I did my PhD again, started again. And I ended up creating a technology called Cytosolve. It you know, initially it was my PhD work, where using this technology, we were able to interconnect these systems of molecular pathways and discoveries that are made in millions of labs all over the world. Right now, as we're speaking right now, before we end this talk, there'll probably be another, you know, 500 papers published in the scientific journals, right? So every day, scientists are publishing in these decentralized labs. They're doing research on some little molecular reaction in the body, and they publish it. And you can win a Nobel Prize just for discovering one little reaction, because biology is an experimental science. There's no laws like physics. You have to do an experiment. You gather data, you publish, you do another experiment, you gather data, you publish. So if you think about the entire human cell, there's probably millions of chemical interactions or more. And so pieces of these interactions are being discovered every day. So our technology takes those interactions, organizes them, mathematically converts them to, you know, physical chemistry equations, and then computes all of them in a decentralized way. Because some of these labs are not going to share all their data, but they'll share those reactions, you see?
Right.
So basically what we created was a computational infrastructure to model any disease on the planet without the need to kill animals, right? Which was seen as a holy grail. So it took me, you know, 4 years to complete the PhD, another 3 years to get it published, because people thought what we did was quite radical. And then that was 2010. And between 2010 to now, which has almost been 13 years, we've been publishing in all the leading journals, going after every major disease. Academic research, as many people are realizing, is a very corrupt environment right now, because all these academics want is just grant money, grant money. They live off grant money. They don't really have any desire to actually ever solve the disease. It's a reality. And you find out there's a lot of fraud in science. Just a month ago, four researchers at Harvard, at Dana-Farber, were found to absolutely just being fraudulently making up data, okay? You also saw this about 6 months ago, a professor at the University of Minnesota found out for the last 16 years he'd been photoshopping biological results. And for 16 years, $3.7 billion went thinking that his theory of Alzheimer's was correct, okay? So the thing is, the priesthood centralizes knowledge. They want to centralize certain narratives of how disease work. Because we take a decentralized approach, we don't care what anyone thinks. We're putting all these pieces together. And so that resulted in this very powerful infrastructure called Cytosolve. And if people are interested, they can go to cytosolve.com to learn more. So what Cytosolve we're doing is, it's literally a 23rd century platform for discovery. We've actually discovered a combination therapy for pancreatic cancer, got it allowed by the FDA, but I'm not really interested in pharma. I'm much more interested in natural compounds. So using Cytosolve, we're going after every major disease and finding combinations of compounds from nature. So, and I can talk more of that. So in many ways, just as email was the electronic version of the inner office mail system, Cytosolve is the electronic version of the computational cellular system, okay? And so after I finished my PhD in 2007, because of my love of medicine and also, you know, indigenous systems of medicine, I took 2 years off and I got a Fulbright, which is considered a very, you know, hard scholarship to get, a fellowship. And I went back to India because I wanted to take all my credibility as an MIT scientist to go study these ancient systems of medicine. And what was interesting was, I think did I just share the Cytosolve piece with you guys? I think I did, right?
Very briefly, the decentralized.
Yeah. There you go. Right. Yeah. So in fact, tomorrow we're doing our first Cytosolve symposium. We're going to do them once a month, and we're going to talk about why there's a need to end animal testing, and Cytosolve can do that. Even the FDA and the NIH say that you don't need all this animal testing. In fact, you don't need any of it, okay? With Cytosolve, we're able to do large-scale computations that match what comes out of the labs, all right? And we can talk more about that. But the more interesting thing was after in 2007, let me just bring up something else. After I finished the development of Cytosolve for my PhD work, I took a little bit of time off and I decided to go to, I think I'm sharing this with you. Can you guys see it? Let me see.
Not the moment.
Oh, there you there go. Okay. So this appeared on the front page of MIT. And on the upper portion of the MIT front page, because they, after I won the Fulbright, they said, armed with MIT 4 degrees, I'm on a new adventure. And this was in 2007, right after I finished my PhD. I went back to India to want to really understand what were these ancient systems of medicine. Right now in the new age world, people talk all sorts of woo-woo stuff. You have a guy with a turban, with a beard, Sadhguru, and they're just bullshitting people because they can't really explain these ancient systems of medicine. So they talk very slowly like this and say quantum healing, this kind of shit, right? So I really wanted to understand what the hell this was. So in the ancient systems of Indian medicine, they use a language to describe the body. Vata, Pitta, Kapha, I'm not getting karma, right? Or Prakriti, the Panchabhutas, right? They have a whole language. But if you ask these guys, what are you talking about? All right, explain to me what fire, earth, metal is. They'll just say, well, it's just sort of, they hand wave. So what I uncovered was that these ancient systems of medicine matched one-to-one with engineering control systems theory. So in engineering, you learn engineering systems, not systems engineering systems, control systems. And I discovered that the 9 principles of control systems engineering matched one-to-one with this language. So I literally, like the Rosetta Stone, I found the missing link. And when I came back in 2009, back from India, I created a course at MIT called Systems Medicine. And it was one of the most well-attended, if not the number one in that year, the most powerful elective, because I was able to bridge engineering system science with yogic science, you see, and actually a foundational way. So we had MDs, PhDs from Harvard, and initially, they'd come with arrogance and they said, wow, this guy has actually figured out a complete link, okay, to these ancient systems of medicine. And that ended up becoming a program, let me share that with you, called Systems Health, which literally is now an educational technology that we offer. I think here we go. We launched it before, but it's a way that we are training medical professionals, but you don't have to be a medical professional. If you go to the website, we're offering our next incentive. People really understand what is this ancient systems of medicine. And not only that, with this knowledge, we have a whole workshop schedule and everyone's, and I can talk more about it. So this is our institute where we are fundamentally re-educating anyone in the alternative health field, so they don't bullshit people. Right? What is the body from a system standpoint? And this was that paper I wrote in an engineering systems journal, which literally bridges this world of Eastern and Western medicine. So what is Systems Health? As this says right here, let me blow it up here. It's a Systems Health is a breakthrough educational technology that bridges and validates ancient systems of medicine long suppressed by the ignorance, even of these yogis and gurus, professors, medical professionals with engineering systems theory to provide the missing link in knowledge that every man, woman, and child needs and deserves to know to think, fight, and heal to win back, our physical, economic, and societal health. And this system's knowledge is at the foundations of our global movement for Truth, Freedom, Health. So Truth, Freedom, Health educates people on how to look at the world from a systems approach and those principles. So that's, and then obviously, as many of you know, these principles of our movement is what is the foundation of my run for president, because we believe we live in a very important world right now where the elites have no interest in advancing people's health. So if we go to this site here, I don't know if you guys can see that. I may have to go there. Yeah, you can see that, right? The downloads. Yeah. So if people go here, the core part of our campaign is we intersecting health, system science, and the need to fight. So if you look at this chart here, you'll find out that the average American right now lifespan is shorter than their parents. It's quite extraordinary. And this is not something that just happened today. It's been going on since 1980. Democrat, Republican, booby Kennedys, all these people have destroyed the health of the American public. And as a part of that, we explained that we need a systems overhaul, you see? So the concept of systems is sort of the core of the way I look at the world. And there's a great video of people should see called shatterthesworm.com. And it really explains, if you want to understand who controls the world, it's 15 minutes. And then, you know, we invite people to come to our town halls. We host every Thursdays, but we do a lot of noble service in really educating people on how to get off the plantation, to put it simply. Okay. So I know that was a little bit of a long background, but in summary, you know, my work involves these areas of health, politics, as well as science. And I can't separate all of them. Truth, freedom, health. All right. Oops, did I lose you guys? Oh, I may have. No, I think you guys are there. Hold on, everyone. I think I lost Ido in this. Let me bring him back. One second, everyone. Sorry, Ido. I think I lost you. Sorry, Ido. I think I clicked on the wrong window. Yeah. But I think you got it all. What's that?
I said I had to cover for a minute.
Okay, that's good. But I think you understand that the core of what I've been doing is from a systems approach, really linking these worlds of science, politics, and medicine.
Right.
And to me,
they're connected.
They're all connected. And the connective tissue is truth, freedom, health. Mm-hmm. That you, what's that?
Dr. Shiva, were talking about the importance of decentralization on regards to health. You know, information has been centralized for decades, especially about health. And I got to meet you, and I think 2019 and 2020 really was a way to separate people in a way that really identify who is actually truthful and who is actually part of the system. And I was following you in that journey.
Uh-huh.
Back in 2020, when everybody was in lockdown, when governments were telling people to stay at home, the mainstream recommendation was stay at home, order fast foods. You know, nobody was really caring for their health, avoid taking sunlight, everybody stuck in their homes, which is not great for the mental health perspective. Meanwhile, the health recommendation was like order foods from Uber Eats and eat fast foods and processed foods and wait for the vaccine. Everybody was having this approach. And I remember watching your videos, and you were one of the few individuals out there who were actually telling the truth about how to actually take care of your body. You were giving a lot of natural solutions. And back then, we were persecuted from doing so. I myself got my X account, my Twitter account was deleted for 8 months. I lost my Facebook account forever. It was never back. And back there, 90% of politicians, 90% I was being too good. 99% of them were telling the same crap. And even the ones that are supposed to be against the system, like you were mentioning before, Kennedy Jr. is one of them.
Yeah, you should call him his actual name. His name is Booby fucking Kennedy. And the reason you need to call him that is because he is absolutely deep state. He was out there. We have to. One of the important things in system science is in system science, you have a control system, which is all about timing. When did you tell the truth? And people don't understand when, you know, the right message for the right person at the right time. Mm-hmm. If you don't say the truth at the right time, you're a complete charlatan, because March 2020 was the right time to speak the truth, not June 2020, right? Not, you know, 2021 to write a book on Fauci, which was stolen from my material. Booby fucking Kennedy is created by the deep state. His entire family is deep state. Yep. And they are created to institutionalize this manipulation of people. So right when people know what the truth is, they start talking the truth. Not when it mattered, because in March of 2020, he put out a tweet promoting lockdowns, saying this will help CO2 and that'll help stop the spread of COVID. And that tweet is what everyone should watch. And then he claims he's for medical freedom. And when I expose Kennedy, all these influencers who claim their medical freedom, even now, like that dude, Doofus Del Bigtree, who built their careers, they were all supporting Kennedy. So we have to understand that you can judge the truth of the person, and you have to hold them to the fire on this, and you have to criticize them and expose them for who they are. Kennedy mm-hmm. is a charlatan. He steals our material. He is created by the deep state to make sure people never get off the plantation.
Yeah.
Right? Tulsi Gabbard, Donald Trump. And this dynamic you can understand very clearly if you take a systems approach. If you're not, you're going to become a lazy dumb fuck, thinking that Trump is your savior. I mean, isn't it fascinating? Trump is a master of theater. He's never really worked a day in his life. Every business he's done has failed. He's a fake businessman on the phone,
mm-hmm.
right?
Well,
so people need to understand the nature of these people. They come from the swarm. They come from the centralization of power. They're anointed by those central powers on what publicity they get. They have nothing to do with the lives of everyday people.
Yeah, Dr. Shiva, if I may. Real quick, guys.
Go ahead.
Well, I was trying. Can you guys hear me? You can hear me fine.
Yeah.
Excellent. So I always emphasize that, you know, true change isn't going to come from government, military action, Kennedy, Trump, anybody. You have to save your own ass in this environment. We all need to work as a collective mind, because there's going to be a time where we're going to have to face all of this together. And if we're going to see any real change, and that's why they're trying so hard to keep us divided. You know, it's really obvious at this point. Also, if I may make another statement, you know, first of all, I didn't get to tell you this. It's truly an honor to actually speak with you. I've heard so many wonderful things about you, your accomplishments. In fact, I've taken my own personal time to dig into what you've done. And I got to say, your track record is incredible. You got your education from MIT. You've got 4 degrees under your belt, if I'm not mistaken. But the real aspect that, of what you do that caught my attention and really gave me an insight of what you, who you are, what you do, is your activism against the experimental drugs during the height of the pandemic in 2021. And that's something I can actually relate to with you, because, you know, I'm sure you were attacked because of your research and whatnot. But I too have personally experienced a very similar situation on my YouTube channel covering the death sticks in 2021. I had to actually delete 21 videos to avoid permanent account termination, simply for exercising my free speech, expressing my opinions, the research that was out there. And all that what we're talking about is now widely recognized as factual. And I just find it so weird.
Well, here's the thing, man. I did a video on vitamin D3, which got 100 million views, based on pure, you know, molecular biochemistry. And you can see them out there. We did like 50 videos on this. What's fascinating is I know we saved a couple hundred million people's lives, because we get lots of people writing to me, you know, people from all over the world. You know, I was going to take the jab. I took your vitamin, you know, vitamin D, quercetin, zinc, etc. The important thing to understand is that the collusion that has been created between academia, government, right, big pharma, and most importantly, the big scientific journals. There's this four-part interaction that's occurred. So if you look at an academic, and this system must be understood, if you get your PhD, you know, you get your PhD, either one of you, right? You have two paths. One is you go be an entrepreneur, or you get into academia. Now, in order to get into academia, you have to ultimately get what's called tenure, okay? If you want to survive long term. Tenure is where you have to publish a bunch of research, and that research has to be recognized in a particular field by all of your peers. Okay. So if Ido, let's say you're in the field of, I don't know, let's say physics, and let's say, you're also in the field of physics. Okay. Both of you. Right. And let's say, Ido is the leading physicist in the world in the area of, let's say, let's take a topic like nuclear physics. Okay. Now, if you're the young graduate student who just gets a position, a faculty position, your first year, you have 7 years to write papers to prove that your research is of high quality. Then you get tenure. Tenure to everyone listening means you never, ever have to work again. You have a full-time job in that university for life. They can't fire you. Now, in order for you to get tenure, you have to convince someone like Ido. Let's say he's the editor of the Journal of Nuclear Physics, like, and he's been there for 30 years. When your tenure review comes up at your university, let's say you're at Stanford, they'll start looking at your research. They'll say, oh, for you to get tenure, please find 10 other of the leading experts. They have to write recommendation letters to tell other people that the research you did over 7 years is of significance. You see? Now, how do you get them to say that your research is significant? You better suck up to Ido, right? You better say you bow down to Ido. And suppose you're doing research that's truly innovative, that exposes that all of Ido's stuff is garbage. Do you think you're going to get tenure? No way. Because Ido sits on, he's also the editor of the major journal, let's say, which publishes the nuclear physics articles. He's also the head of the department, let's say at Stanford. And guess what? Ido may also be on the review board over the government for NIH funding or NSF funding. So when you're applying for grants, he's one of the influencers there. And he may also be on the scientific advisory board of, let's say, Pfizer. So one guy is in three different positions, a governmental position, a university position, a publication. And this is a reality. And a lot of people don't know this. Mm-hmm. So a new finding in science may get completely suppressed because of the flow of money and capital.
Yeah.
So what's happened since 1970 is that innovative researchers do not make it in academia anymore. Who makes it are good salespeople. So if you can bullshit your way and you can get government funding and you know how to kiss ass, you will be very successful. Einstein did not publish one paper peer-reviewed. So when he submitted his last paper to Physical Review, I think, they said, oh, Dr. Einstein, we're going to send this out for peer review. He goes, what are you talking about, peer review? Because if new innovative work comes, you shouldn't have peers review it. His view was, you publish it directly, let the people decide. You say? Right. That's decentralization.
At NASA, too, is they set these standards, and I don't want to go down a rabbit hole like this, but they set standards in place for people to realize, well, that's as far as we've gone. That's as far as we can go. And that way now no one will think outside of the box until that is announced by who? The ones who run the narrative, basically the mainstream. What's interesting about you said, Dr. Shiva, is that you could tie this all back to the financial system. And I find that to be very interesting because if you look back into the history, for instance, of the Federal Reserve, and I've always taken pleasure in exploring the past to understand what has transpired so we can understand what the current circumstances are, right? And it's evident at this point that people, corporations, nations, and I'm talking about pharmaceuticals as well, and even the military-industrial complex, they are heavily reliant on central banks because that is their lifeline, money, essentially making them and us slaves to the system. And with central banks have their ability to print all this money, they can continue to perpetuate this debt-based Ponzi scheme that keeps them at the top while widening the wealth gap and, of course, impoverishing everyone else, but at the same time, controlling the narrative, the information. And I think that's how they're going to continue to operate in the meantime, even as we digitize health and wellness. Because if they're able to print more money because they don't have a choice, they're able to sustain this debt-based system, which gives them the ability to, of course, buy up all the assets, buy up control, and of course, widen that wealth gap again with higher inflation and continued consolidation. So the way I see this, how it's going to play out eventually is, and I hate to say it like this, but it always seems to repeat itself. And they're going to eventually put the poor in a very dire situation where they're going to be unable to compete and even stay afloat because they're burdened with the cheap money that's being printed and the high interest rates, while the top 1%, and that's what we're really talking about here, is going to benefit from all the cheap loans and the lower interest rates. So it's clear that they have, and it's not just finance, but it's everything else around it. They have a very well-defined recipe to keep people dumb, to keep people poor. And this is why I continue to emphasize on my channel, and what me and Ido do here is to diversify also outside of the dollar and into gold and silver digital assets if we're ever going to challenge their dominance, but it's also outside the box thinking.
Yeah, look, the reality is that anything that has ever changed in the world has come from bottoms-up movements. This is something, so I have, you know, a little bit of refinement on what you said. People think that technology is going to solve problems. I don't care what technology it is, right? You know, publishing, the internet, blockchain, you know, linked list, whatever, you can put whatever it is. Ultimately, what we realize, whenever a new technology comes, the elites are very, very quick to, over time, control that technology because they control centralized infrastructures. So, I mean, ultimately, I'm communicating with you right now because of four major companies who own the actual pipes. Sure. Vodafone, AT&T, right? And in during the Arab Spring, if you remember about 10, 15 years ago, when the students, young people in Egypt started protesting and against a filthy dictator by the name of Mubarak, right? Initially, they let the students protest. Millions came out and they were communicating on Facebook and da-da-da-da-da, right?
Yeah.
Now, that was fine. They're fine when students protest because students don't have economic power. However, when the labor movement came out, when workers in Egypt started saying, we're going to join the students, literally within 24 hours, Mubarak made a phone call, one phone call to Vodafone, and they shut down everything.
Yep.
Okay. So we need to recognize that the swarm and the elites, when push comes to shove, they will consolidate power as never before. The only way out of this, and this is, as a technologist, I can tell you, ultimately, the dispersion of technology will only come if working people seize the means of production. And this may sound quote-unquote communist or Marxist-Leninist, and I don't really care because it has nothing to do with that. The concept of seizing the means of production, which means the actual base infrastructure by working people, is the only way out of this. Now, in order to do that, it's not going to happen through terrorism. It's not going to happen through just guns. It's going to actually happen through people raising their consciousness.
Agreed.
To understand that one person understanding the systems of interconnections, the linkage between science, the linkage between fighting for freedom, and the linkage between your personal health have got to come together. And that can only happen with a systems level understanding. So this is why the movement that we've created, Truth, Freedom, Health, fundamentally goes at that very core root cause. We're not here to say that there's a technology solution to this. To the extent that technology can help, it is directly intimately linked to our ability to disperse that technology. And you can look at the history of technology, for example, right? When the printing press came, people said, wow, this is great. I can publish books. I can do this, right? And then eventually four major publishing companies consolidated power. In 1993, when the web came, you know, I wrote a book called Arts and the Internet, because I do a lot of work with art and, you know, in addition to science. And this was about like, hey, all you artists can go direct, right? Everyone will build their own website. It'll be decentralized. We'll have small ISPs. But within about 7 years, what ended up happening was you had Facebook, Google, you know, three or four major companies, and everyone started building their web presence on there. So you again had consolidation. And you can see it right now, even with Bitcoin, with Larry Fink and BlackRock and everyone getting involved, right? So it is. So people always seem to think there's a way that you can tame imperialism, that there's some shortcut to it. There is no shortcut. We have to seize the means of production. And in order to get to that point, it requires enough people to want to build mass movements that are driven by a very, very theoretical understanding of systems thinking.
Well, collective consciousness, that's what we need.
Well, systems consciousness. So collective consciousness has been used for a long time, and it's collective action, which comes from a consciousness of recognizing why you need to act collectively.
That's right.
So consciousness needs to come first. Marx called it class consciousness, but the problem was when Marx was writing a lot of his material, he didn't have an understanding of where technology would go, you see? Mm-hmm. But he did have a very good retrospective view of the notion of production systems and how that affects consciousness. So he nailed that well. But
right. And well, it's fascinating that you say that, because you're absolutely right, by the way. But all that collective consciousness will translate into collective action, like you said. But what really frustrates me today in the, for instance, the crypto space, right? Many people think this technology can really solve all the problems. And I agree it can solve a lot of the problems, right? But not all of them. Because in the crypto space now, many people are unaware of the true nature of the beast system, what we're talking about here. And I focus on finance. So personally, I know how the SWIFT system works. And that beast system I'm referring to is the SWIFT system, because it serves as a monetary arm for the deep state to expand the reach worldwide. Hence, they have a connection to over 12,000 banks all over the world. And SWIFT, many people don't know this, it's actually operated by a very few Swiss bankers and royal bloodlines. And those are the same people. Many people don't know this institution. It's a secret organization tied to those bloodlines. It's called Octagon. So you can go check that out, maybe on Rumble or somewhere else. But people forget that blockchain was really designed to free us and circumvent all these sinister institutions like SWIFT that seek to really control us, you know? And people in the crypto space, they're just very blindly follow those that seek to enslave us without even realizing the technologies that are being put into place, and where this could actually have a chance, give them the chance to attain maximum control. And that's the hard truth of it. In my opinion, many people still don't understand what's transitioning in the blockchain space with cryptocurrency, if you will. First of all, Jay, it's so good to see you, man.
Good to see you guys as well. I don't want to interrupt. Just keep going. You know, anytime you and my brother Edo Farina are actually on, I love to be on. And I would love to just be in Dr. Shiva's shadow. That's how much I love and admire that guy. So it's always an honor being here.
Yeah, we just did a workshop here. You know, we are training. So what we do is our movement, Truth, Freedom, Health, 500 million people know about it. A lot of people came to know about it during the 2020. The level of shadow banning that scumbags like Elon Musk and Zuckerberg do, who are the not so obvious establishment, people need to understand this, because today they put the establishment, we should never underestimate them. And this is what people do. They have enough theoreticians at places like the Kennedy School of Government, MIT and Harvard, who are watching this video. They're watching trends, and they understand system science. So they know, okay, people have exposed, you know, the work we did in 2020, exposing the backdoor portal to Twitter, right? All of this stuff. We're going to also say, oh yeah, the backdoor portal to Twitter exists. Oh my God, is this awful? Tucker Carlson does that, right? All these guys do that. They're making money off that. They're getting very, very sophisticated, but they didn't do shit in 2020. So they embrace the manipulation they do, and then they take it one step further. So that now they have people in digital cages. They control through predictive analytics your reach, right? So they have created a doctrine that says free speech does not equal free reach, which is not what the founders of the United States wanted. The Postal Service, for example, which was created, was so free speech could equal free reach. So without free reach, there is no free speech. So Elon Musk grew up in an apartheid South Africa. He's absolutely okay with apartheid in the digital world. It's in his bones. And we have to recognize that there's some fundamental issues when you take from a systems approach. These people have a set of ethos and values where they will tell you to your face what they're going to do to you. Mm-hmm. Maybe a little bit delayed in time. They will actually talk about how they oppress you and make them sound like they're the heroes who are exposing the oppression. right? But they do not want people to build movements, vibrant, dynamic, militant movements, bottoms up. When I mean militant, I mean where people recognize that they need to call people Zionist cocksuckers, where they need to call Fucker Carlson, Fucker Carlson. They need to say we need to get off the plantation. These three slogans that I just shared with you are very, very powerful slogans that, you know, typically an MIT PhD should not be calling someone a Zionist cocksucker. But this is typically what they want to do to control language. And what we are teaching people is that you must use these slogans. You must call Fucker Carlson, Fucker Carlson, because he is created by the deep state to manipulate you back into the swarm. And we must show ultimately massive disrespect for these people, because that's how they keep people manipulated to speak in a diplomatic way, you see? And so when you talk about the financial system, right? The ultimate thing that is not talked about is that all of this exists because of the F-16s and, you know, massive amounts of military equipment. The dollar is backed by just, you know, massive military hardware and by the existence of Zionism. And this has to be understood. And if we're discussing the financial system, you have to discuss the political system and the politics. You have to discuss that. I mean, just look at what happened to Trump. Supposedly poor old Trump got $150 million, $450 million damages suit, right? But within 2 weeks, he's going to make $6 billion off Truth Social. The timing of that is not coincidental.
Agreed.
See what I'm saying? So we have to have a discussion of what is Zionism as a part of this discourse. And I don't mean Judaism, Zionism, which believes a small set of people have the right to manipulate the vast majority of humanity. Brahmanism in India is like that. Nazism is like that. These political ideologies justifying a small have the right to control the many is the framework of Zionism.
Yeah.
So we have to discuss this in the context of discussing crypto and financial. You have to have a holistic view of this.
Right.
Why is Larry Fink now into Bitcoin? Right?
That's a surface conversation. You're absolutely right. You know, it's going to get to a point, though, where we do need a new system. And you're right about talking about all this stuff, Zionism. Normally, guys, I would talk about this off camera personally, but I'm happy to do it on camera. And I have many perspectives on all this stuff and information, too, from the people I know insiders, I would say. But what I told some of my friends is that, you know how many people will use the argument saying, well, look, Trump's bringing down the deep state, right? Let me explain something. I don't think people understand how these elites operate. They will bring down their own people if it means exposing themselves in order to build this new system for where all the crimes are kind of already out there. They will take down their own players if it means convincing the masses who are finding out about this stuff that this is the way we need to go. And there you go. That's your false messiah. But at the same time, when you even look, I talked to Francis Hunt yesterday. It was a very great conversation. I'm going to put this out there in 2 days. But he made it very clear. And, you know, what he was saying, I totally agreed with him. I just don't share these perspectives publicly with everybody. But whether you're going left or right, you have to understand that these people sell their opinion and voice to the highest bidder. That's how it works. That's how it's always worked for a very long time. So it's really crazy. And what I emphasize on my channel is wealth preservation. How can people protect themselves? And I keep telling people to buy food, buy water, precious metals, position yourself inside and outside of the new system. But when I say outside the new system, I'm talking about physical assets. That way you can dictate how far you can move. Digital money, it's happening, but it's very scary too. That is where they can tokenize everything, hence the World Economic Forum saying, own nothing and be happy. And what they're doing in the financial system is making it so hard for the average person to hold on to his home or her home and his car and her car so you could sell it to those who are trying to buy it all. And that's what they do with this printing money debt-based Ponzi scheme. So it's very interesting how these are all interconnected, including what's happening in the health sector.
Well, look, I think we should have a lot of these discussions openly. There's no fear, because what they do now in a very precise way, we have to go to the root of power. The root of power, you need to understand, is highly, highly, they too are a swarm. They also understand the principles of decentralization. People seem to unfortunately think that those in power do not understand principles of decentralization. They also do. And so people will mistakenly say, it's this group or it's this reptile race or whatever. You know, this is just nonsense. The swarm is highly decentralized. You saw Ivanka Trump go hang out with the Ambanis in India, okay? The Ambanis in the middle of Bombay, where there's slums everywhere, have built a $1 billion skyscraper, okay, which is their home. So we need to understand the swarm is highly, highly decentralized. And they have their own internal differences, but together they move as one. And I think when it comes to Trump, you need to understand he is not some martyr, even a fake martyr. He is completely part of the swarm. One needs to go look at his history. When he went bankrupt in the late 90s with investing in Atlantic City, I mean, what idiot put $675 million in Atlantic City at a 14% interest rate? That's what he did, okay? He loses, right? 14% interest rate, okay? And the person who came to save him was Wilbur Ross, who became his head of commerce. Well, he was doing all the debt financing for the Rothschilds. The point is that they knew in Trump, they had someone who was a good con man. And you can read their writings. They talk about this. He was able to manipulate people with Worldwide Wrestling Federation, right? And so they put him on a trajectory to become president. This is all well organized. This is not something random.
Years in advance.
Oh yeah, big time. They did book deals. They got him Ari Emanuel to be his agent. They got him The Apprentice Show. And then, you know, it's not coincident. It's not just random that he wins in 2016. They needed a white guy to manipulate all the working class who had voted for Obama. So they had Obama as a Manchurian candidate. Then they needed Trump. Then they put back in Biden, and they'll probably put back in Trump because of whatever deals the swarm has struck with him.
Well, it goes back to Project Looking Glass. If you really want to,
well, it's not any one project. The central philosophy people need to understand is that the swarm is decentralized. They understand that the goal is maximization of power, profit, and control, and they'll use this project or that project or this entity or another. But the presidential elections are really more of a pageant, a beauty pageant, to see who can basically defraud through, you know, who can con people the best, and that's who they'll back. That's what it's fundamentally about. But we need to really have this expansive, principled view that it's not, the swarm too is decentralized. And without that view, if we put it in one locale, we're going to always make mistakes. We won't build a movement because we'll think, oh, I'm going to hedge my bets over here. They're highly, highly decentralized. They know exactly what they're doing.
So, I'll tell you a real secret is that they're building a two-tier financial system. I've said this a few times on my show. But with this digitization of money, there's a two-tier financial system. They're going to have the money for the masses, and they're going to have their own money backed by real tangible assets. And this is why we emphasize a lot of people to make some investments into these protocols that are outside the central bank purview. So,
well, the elites have always had a two-tier system.
Yeah.
Right. It's always one step forward, two steps back for themselves in everything. One set of rules for them and another set of rules for us. You know, we go out and collect signatures to get on the ballot, for example. Here's a two-tier system. The Republicans and Democrats don't even have to collect signatures. I don't even see them out there. I'm convinced they have a boiler room where they're writing signatures on a pager. When we go out to collect signatures, and we have everyday working people go out, an electrician who goes out to collect signature in Kentucky, he gets thrown in jail for collecting signatures, strip searched. True story. A 74-year-old woman in Florida goes to collect signatures in front of a Publix. She gets surrounded by 7 male cops. Then they have a woman cop basically attack her. So I want you guys to recognize that we're on the front lines fighting for something very, very specific, the right of independent people to rise up bottoms up.
Yeah.
All right. So what you will recognize is these stores. So by the United States laws, I don't know if you're familiar with, when you want to get on the ballot, you have to get so many signatures on a petition. In Utah, it's around 1,000 signatures. California, it's 300,000 signatures. So how do you as an independent candidate get those signatures? Well, you have to mobilize volunteers. Boobie Kennedy doesn't do that. He goes to the Zionist PACs and he asks them for $20 million, and then he goes hire signature vendors. This is not bottoms up. So we actually, in Utah and Idaho, in the middle of all the snow and sleet, our volunteers collected enough signatures to get on the ballot. He went and negotiated in the back room to try to get an extension. He can't even collect 1,000 signatures. Now it gets very interesting. In 1982, there was a Supreme Court ruling that you can go in front of any retail store and collect signatures during a campaign, because Supreme Court wisely ruled during a campaign that area in front of a retail store becomes a town square. You can, the private property rights of a owner get superseded by constitutional rights. It was a good ruling. So when we go to collect signatures, cops will show up. Oh, you can't be in front of this guy's retail store. We have to do the explanation, educate the cops. The government purposely does not educate the cops. You see what I'm saying? So we had a 74-year-old woman in front of Publix. She gets attacked. And we have to do all this education. Now, these stores that I just mentioned, Myers in Chicago, Publix, Walmart, are multi-billion dollar companies. The government is not supposed to take the side of one company over another, a private citizen, but they do. And this is where the election fraud begins, even at these points of where you're trying to get on the ballot in a honest way, not like Boobie Kennedy, not like the Democrats, not like, Trump. Okay. Yeah. And this is occurring in red states. Kentucky, the state of Thomas Massie, supposedly a liberal libertarian, or Rand Paul. So the fraud is occurring in terms of centralization of power to make sure independents can never get on the ballot. So anyone listening, you should go to Shiva for President. If you really want to walk the walk, crypto's great. Great. Go do that if you want. But that's not the solution, guys. The future is going to come through mass movements of people building bottoms-up movements. There's no other solution but that. You can invest in gold and precious metals, but I'll tell you this, they can even control that. They can control the price of anything. The issue is we must shatter the swarm. We must fundamentally change this, and it's only going to occur through working people rising up with the right political theory. There's no other quick fix, you know? And we think there's a quick fix. Oh, I'm going to, I'm going to protect myself if there's a nuclear war by collecting enough food, right? I'm going to do this by doing this. The only real solution is to building mass movements with the right theory and people raising their consciousness to become political warriors at a very, very deep level, not to be influencers, but to lead, you know?
But the system is so centralized because of the banking system, and that's really what gives them their ability to overreach, if you will.
Well, the system is centralized not because of that. The system is centralized because they keep a lot of people on the plantation and educating them not to build bottoms-up movements. This is why the centralization of power takes place, because people are actively bombarded with multiple, $600 trillion in that moves through the financial system. At least 10% of that is dedicated to brainwashing people every microsecond that they are supposed to be good house slaves, not to get off the plantation. And this brainwashing is incessant,
So, yeah, but the system was also designed to fail once they've gained enough control for us not to do anything about it. And that's really what we see happening right now. We're talking about waking up the masses who've been indoctrinated for 70, 80 plus years, longer than that, at the last second, because it's coming to a point where the average person can't tolerate the economic strain any longer. And when you really begin to hit people's wallets, historically, that is really when you're going to start to see people wake up, mass movements, mass action.
No, it's not true. I disagree with you there. Absolutely. This is a wrong theory. Let me tell you why. And please listen to this.
Sure.
So people sit on the sidelines and they say, and I was speaking to this guy, what's his name? Kim.com, right? And Kim's like, oh, when the shit hits a fan, then people rise up. It has never occurred like that. In fact, if you wait that long, there will be fascism. The reality is that you have to actually consciously build a movement. The iPhone didn't just come out one day because someone said, oh my God, they're shutting down the phone system. We need this. No. And you have to take building a movement as consciously and as practically as what it takes to build a bridge or build a microphone or build anything. You have to have the physics, and it has to be done in a very methodical way, and you have to play the long game. Right. Whenever there has been devastation, it's not like people rise up. So this was a theory in the 1917 that people used to, prior to 1917, people used to have this idea, oh, when oppression happens, when the shit hits the fan, then the masses will rise up. It's actually oppression oppresses. So it's not a good theory. What needs to happen is, this is when people need to study history, understand system thinking, and you have to actually build a movement bottoms up. It's right. Absolutely but not true that
I agree with you entirely, but the thing is people can't even think about building a movement because they're too burdened with debt.
That's not true. No. And first of all, let's talk about what it takes to build a movement, okay? And the work of Price Pritchett, a great organizational theorist, you know, of 70 years. If you look at any society, you will always have three groups of people. You want to say go left, there'll be one set of people always want to go right. You say the absolute truth, the sun rises from the east, they'll say no, the sun rises from the west. Those are called resistors. And Pritchett found this in every culture, Aboriginal culture, you know, Papua New Guinea culture, corporate organizations. There's always around 30% of people who will never do anything because they just want to sit on their fat ass and not do anything, okay?
That's everybody.
Well, no, that's around 30%. 50% these are called resistors. If you ever start up a company or you work with people, you'll find, oh, let's go do this innovative. We need to do this marketing. Oh, well, everything's good the way it is, okay? 30%. The other 50%, what Pritchett found, were people who watch which way the wind blows. They're fence sitters. They're not vocal. They want to be popular, but they don't want to say anything. 20% of people are the change agents. Now, what he said happens is in organizations that start failing, the mistake that happens is those people who are change agents who say, yeah, I know where to go, I have this vision, they do a big, massive mistake. They whine about, oh, the world sucks, people are dumb, they can't do stuff, you know, da, 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 da. Okay. And that 20% will spend 90% of their time on the 30% trying to convince them. If you looked at the pandemic, there were many people in families, oh my God, I'm going to convince that guy not to wear a mask. I'm going to convince him not to get the booster. Okay. So the 20% of supposed change agents make this very strategic mistake. They spend 80% of their time trying to convince these resistors. You see, even if you're starting a startup or an entrepreneurial organization, the early entrepreneurs are moving the company forward. They hire new people and they get a bunch of assholes who don't want to do anything. The management of that 20% will spend 80% of their time on that 30%. And you know what happens? Your organization goes down. You have to ignore that 30% or get rid of them and focus on the 20%, strengthening them. So you'll pull the 50% over. All right. So a lot of people who think they're smart theoretically think that we have to focus on, you know, people are dumb, we can't do anything. There's enough of us. I know this because we do open houses every day. We get people from all over the world. So you have to have this very clear discipline to say, I don't give a fuck about convincing you, because there are enough people who are ready, and you have to mobilize them with the right knowledge and with the right framework. And then you'll pull the other 50% over. And that's what we're doing with Truth Freedom Health. We find enough people. And those people you find are very good people, very self-reflective, very thoughtful, and they come from all different backgrounds. And those people are what you can build a movement on, and you have to do that now. Because when the shit hits the fan, those people are going to be trying to, you know, they're going to be oppressed. There won't be a movement when the shit hits the fan. So it's, this is a time to build a movement.
Well, we emphasize a lot of building community. We do emphasize this quite often, actually. It's just the timing is not the best for everybody, I would say.
No, this is the best timing, man.
Best timing to talk about it. And
no, best timing to mobilize. This is the time to mobilize. You guys should come to our open house. You'll see the quality of people that come there. Electricians, plumbers, surgeons, everyone are working people who've gone down this journey. They wasted 5 years with Trump. They were following Joe fucking Rogan. They were following Fucker Carlson.
I don't watch any of those people.
Right. You know, but I'm saying there's
research, right? The average person, I think, has been misled by what you said, those deep state operatives right. who are so embedded in the YouTube and even Twitter. And like, I listen to what Tucker Carlson has to say. I take it with a grain of salt and I do my own research. And that's when I realize the true nature of what he's perpetuating. So.
Yeah, there's enough people now, you know, I'll give you an example. There was a orthopedic surgeon who was going to give like 20 grand to Kennedy because Kennedy was saying all the right things. And then out of randomly, a video pops up with me exposing Kennedy and what's his name? Joe Rogan. Now, this was very hard for this guy to hear this. He said, for 2 days, I had cognitive dissonance. But what's wonderful is this guy actually had that cognitive dissonance, was self-reflective, and you know he's helping us a lot in California. What I'm saying is there's enough people who get it, but they need the actual framework to mobilize a movement, and that's what we're doing. There, everything that has taught me in life is if you go look at the women's movement, when Susan B. Anthony, when she talked about universal suffrage, they laughed at her, the Democrats and Republicans. She went direct to people. The 19th Amendment was a result of that. The civil rights movement, when it came, Martin Luther King was promoted by the Kennedys to hijack that movement. But there was a Malcolm X, you see? So we have a huge, wonderful opportunity right now to actually mobilize movements. And we find this globally. And you don't need everyone. You can't waste your time with everyone. So I'm quite optimistic, actually.
Can I hear you talk? What's about the end goal for CBDCs? I think we can't avoid the CBDCs topic, you know.
Well, look, if you look at what's going on with digital currency, right, it's a natural process where the central banks want to own this, right? They want to control it. And we know from a technology standpoint, people have this romantic illusion that somehow they keep using the word blockchain. I'm not sure how many people have ever programmed a blockchain. How many people ever programmed a linked list? How many people understand what hash is, right? The stuff is not that sophisticated, okay? The actual hardware and the technologies that control this are still in the control of the elites. And without that understanding, people are going to have a romantic view, just like they had a romantic view of any type of technology. So the trajectory that this is on is a centralized digital bank currencies are where this is headed towards, right? And there's no... And you can see it, right? It's right in your face, right? Especially with, you know, with BlackRock and these guys are doing. So the ultimate goal is the CDBCs is one leg of a three-legged stool to integrate that with social media. And the third leg of that stool is carbon tax. So mm-hmm. once you have those three legs of the stool in a complete framework, which is already there, most of it, the infrastructure is already there. You literally have a digital cage for controlling every man, woman, and child. And what's happening right now, people are making people feel good that this is good for them.
Yeah.
And that's a propaganda that takes place.
It's actually funny because, interestingly, I say this, the system is failing just as SWIFT and those, you know, banking institutions are getting ready to roll out the CBDs to coincide with the crisis. So the timing also, like you said earlier, it's not an accident. All the timing is, it's just so orchestrated carefully. These people plan in advance, but the implementation of a CBDC, in my opinion, digital slave system under the guise of a level playing field. And that's how they're going to sell this to the masses. And that's how they've been selling it. But the real intent of it was really to consolidate control of the people and leave people with fewer or limited options to escape that new system.
Exactly. Yeah. And what's interesting, you take a country like India, I don't know if you guys have been there, 6 billion people now. Everyone is absolutely fine doing everything digital, right? You have the smallest guy on a street, you know, may have one leg selling bananas, and he's got Google Pay, okay, for example. So the embedding of into people's minds that digital models are correct, right? India, quote unquote, stopped the black market in India. So, but what it was massive consolidation of every, and India has a ID system where everyone's ID'd and tagged and bagged, right, in the country. So India came from a world of the British being there. Most Indians are absolutely fine having no First Amendment rights. It's quite fascinating. They're still British subjects in a lot of ways. So India in many ways has become a wonderful test bin for this. So when you roll out, you know, CDBCs in India, it'll just be adopted, accepted, and support, you know, embraced fully.
Right. But you look at what I was talking about, though, you know, the economic strain on the average person is so bad to where they'll have to kind of accept it. And that's like a worst case scenario. But there are ways, to your point, Dr. Shiva, is how people can mobilize together and still position themselves to defeat the system or challenge it, the dominance of it. And that's really, you know, what I was talking about is buying precious metals, buying assets outside the system, still digitizing, getting involved in the money for their system. And we teach a specific digital asset. One of them is called XRP. And that's really what we focus on here. I'm sure everyone can agree with me on that, right? Yeah. Dr. Shiva, can I ask you a question? What are your thoughts on the digital asset XRP? If you've heard of it or...
I have heard about it from Ido. I haven't had a chance to go fully into it and look at all your frameworks, you know, which, you know, I should get educated on, but I haven't had the time. But I can, broadly, what I can tell you is that these frameworks ultimately need to be owned by people. You say the framework development themselves and the actual core infrastructure, what I call the last mile. The last mile of a lot of this infrastructure is still owned by, I mean, the physical infrastructure to operate all these things is not owned by the broad mass of people. And until that's done, we're still going to have this serious problem. And who owns it, who can turn it off and shut it off. The reason I gave that Mubarak example was that everyone was very, very excited, right? When Arab Spring was taking place, you know, Egypt has like 20-30% unemployment. Oh, wow, the kids are protesting there. They're out there. It's decentralized in every part, right? And then ultimately, one phone call to Vodafone, boom, it's shut off, done. So, you know, these infrastructures, I mean, we have our own data center here. We run all of our stuff, but ultimately, I'm relying on Verizon, right? The last mile here, they own. They can cut me off right now, and we're gone, right? So who owns these core infrastructures? And that's what I'm motivating you guys to start thinking about, the fundamental physical infrastructures. Who owns the actual brick and mortar of these infrastructures? Because ultimately, the atoms still are owned by a finite set of people. And how do we overcome that? And that discussion has to be as a part of this larger digital discussion, because you know, the two waves of the internet. First was the digital wave where everyone thought the internet was going to be self-service. The second wave became full service, right? The human beings. And with all of these things, it's ultimately going to be the physical atoms. Ultimately, who controls those physical atoms and those physical assets? You have to have that discussion in addition to being talking about the digital framework. Now, there is a way out of that. And the networks and this physical infrastructure, it too must be controlled by people. If you go look at the analogy of when the founders of the United States in 1787 created the Postal Service, it was quite wild. A lot of people don't give this enough credit. Oh, what do you mean Postal Service? When Franklin created the Postal Service and others, the view was one individual should be able to send a letter to another individual without any government intervention. Think about this problem. This is without digital. So they decided there would be individual postal offices, and they created a police force that if anyone sent a mail letter from here to here and any postal service worker opened up, it was 22-year sentence in prison. Now consider what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. So in 1997, the physical infrastructure of sending all this mail, which is quite extraordinary, It's quite amazing. For 10 cents, you could send a letter from here to there, and it gets delivered on time. It's pretty amazing. It's quite extraordinary. 1997, email volume overtakes postal mail volume. I was 28, 29 at the time, and I met with the Postal Service, and I said, look, as a guy who created email, you must offer a public infrastructure. Because what happened in 1997? Google, Hotmail, AOL took over mail. Private companies now own the transmission of large majority of snail mail went into this. No one reads these, you know, the privacy. They own your mail, okay? They can open up your mail. But if I send you a letter, if someone opens it up, a lot of people don't understand. There is the Postal Service as a police force. By the Constitution, my communication with you is protected. I can sue the government. I cannot sue AOL for opening up my email because they're a private company. So in 1997, the Postal Service told me, who are you? You're a 29-year-old kid. You don't know anything. We're running a half a, you know, we have a half a million employees. Go away. Well, in 2011, the Postal Service is going out of business. And they could have made money by offering, let's say, for 20 bucks a year, you get a public email service, but protected by the First Amendment. You see, we don't have that anymore. So here's an example of an infrastructure that was designed in 1787 to ensure communication that could happen freely by an entity which was protected by law to throw people in prison. So you can have all the technology you want, but where are the laws to make sure if someone violates this infrastructure that they're going to go to prison? There is none. We're just relying on technology.
Well, if we're going in the technological world in which we are, we have to have a digital constitution of human rights done. That's
well, it has to. Yeah. And it has to be part that you can sue government. Right now, you can't sue Twitter. You got thrown off. You can't sue YouTube because the law is they're a private person. They have the right to have First Amendment rights. Now, in my case, when the government contacted Twitter to throw me off, that's why I was the first one to expose that we had rights. So it is sometimes it is good that government, we the people, own certain public infrastructure, because then we know who to go after. So it's more
referring to common law, essentially. That's what common law is.
Well, yeah, it's common law. But I'm saying that the founders of the United States were quite extraordinary people. They didn't have digital infrastructure. They already had figured this out, that you needed to have free speech equals free reach. Certain infrastructure must be owned by the public and protected by laws. We don't have that anymore. Yeah. Elon Musk, Mark Zuckerberg, three fucking people now own communications. And that was not what the founders envisioned. They created what you would call a rudimentary infrastructure called the Postal Service. Quite an extraordinary infrastructure. Now, the solution out of this is mesh networks. If you look at all of these individual postal hubs, they're owned by the people for the people. We need to have a network, a physical network, where all of this crypto and all of this transactions that is owned by us. It cannot be owned by AT&T and Vodafone. This is a critical thinking I have with the crypto people. They're not looking at the infrastructure. The Indian government owns the entire infrastructure. They make one call to the Ambanis, it's gone. Your money is gone. You're dead.
So that's the problem with the crypto market too, is that people don't realize that the infrastructure is tied to the internet. And also to the banking system, because if you have an exchange, you have to have a bank account.
It can be the internet, but if you have peer-to-peer
like
mesh networks that are owned by the people for the people, which we can do, the technology is there, you know, $25 WiMAX. My point is that the founders who created America were quite revolutionary people. They may not have had computing, but they had conceptually this concept that certain physical infrastructure must be protected by the people for the people. Encryption is not going to solve it, because I do encryption tomorrow, there's going to be quantum computing, which will break your encryption. Mossad will have something better than the CIA. It keeps going on and on and on. You have to have the ability to throw people in jail and criminalize this stuff by the people. And until that's done, all of this is vaporware, in my view.
And that, we just keep going in circles.
Yep, exactly. So someone says mesh networks. So mesh networks. So if you take every postal office location, you could put up, let's say, a quote unquote antenna. You could put one up on your house. All of us could. And now we have a network that competes directly with all the public networks. Every communication I send is done by us. We are the network. And until that happens, until we have capabilities to do that, we're all beholden to them. The computing infrastructure, the physical network infrastructure, et cetera. All of us can be turned off tomorrow by four guys. One phone call and we're all dead. You know, they can, fine, we have free speech on YouTube, but you can be knocked off right now from your home where you, every of your communications coming off your router gets blocked. And that's it. Doesn't matter. Everything's done. Off your iPhone, et cetera. You're not going to be able to transact any crypto off this. Doesn't matter how many coins you have on this. You're not going to be able to use it anywhere.
I agree with you entirely. Well, Dr. Shiva, personally, you guys are more than welcome to continue this, but I have another call in like 10 minutes. So I just want to say it's been an incredible, engaging conversation. I've learned so much from you, and I'm going to do more research. And I would love to get your information for Ido, if that's okay.
Yeah, yeah, let's connect. You're in Texas. Yeah, I mean, I think you're in Texas. We should do a follow-up. But I encourage all of you guys to really recognize, come to our open house. We do every Thursday is 11 a.m. and 8 p.m. But we need, you know, I do a lot of podcasts, very smart people. The leap that does not happen, and I hope you guys are, you know, do this. You got a lot of smart people, but they don't want to learn the science of systems. Because if you don't learn system science, which the elites learned, Kissinger knows system science, Zbigniew Brzezinski learned it, okay? George Soros is one of the leaders in reflexivity theory. The reason a finite set of people are controlling 8 billion people is they are thinking 20 steps ahead. They understand system dynamics. And without us, enough people embracing that, we're never going to win. It's not going to happen.
We
have to understand system science.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I definitely appreciate your brilliance. You're making a lot of phenomenal points that really get you to thinking about this whole narrative. But yeah, I also have to go. I have a show at 12. I thank you so much, Edo and Versan and Dr. Shiva for having me
on. Versan, thank you. Very nice meeting you. Thank you for
amazing.
Your pleasure. Your insight.
Yes.
Same here again.
Talking with you again, okay? And Jay, you and I need to catch up.
For sure, Versan.
Always a pleasure to have you, Dr. Shiva. Thank you also, James and Versan, for joining us. And hopefully in the future, we can have Dr. Shiva again. He's definitely one of his favorites.
Yeah, I mean, I think we can go a little bit deeper because you guys may really enjoy understanding how research can be completely changed in a decentralized way. Right now, the reason there's not a lot of advances in medicine is because research is centralized into a few narratives, you know? So there's a whole different way to do that. Anyway, guys, thank you. Be well, be the light. Best to you and your families. Great work. Keep it up.
Same to you guys. Thanks, appreciate you guys.
Bye-bye. Take care. All right, everyone. That was our friends in the crypto world. And I hope this was valuable. But fundamentally, what I want to explain to all of you guys is our movement, Truth Freedom Health, has solutions. Now, one of the immediate solutions that all of you guys can do is go to Shiva for President and get one of these bumper stickers. These bumper stickers are important because you put it on the back windshield of your car and 100,000 people will see it. Everyone knows that we're looking for ways to break the shadow banning and the censorship, but this is one way that you can be an agent of change. So go to ShivaForPresident.com right there, and you can volunteer and donate. But simple way is, you know, get one of these bumper stickers. The second way, as I was discussing with our friends here, is everyone needs to recognize that we need to build a bottoms-up movement. And that bottoms-up movement is only going to come if people recognize that we need to take a systems approach to understand the world. Now, this is not intuitive knowledge. It's not something that you're taught in school. So I've had to organize this curricula so people can actually understand this. So I'm going to play this video, and then I'll come back. But we have to build a bottoms-up movement, and that bottoms-up movement can only come if people understand the science of systems and you get educated on this. So let me play this and I'll come right back.
We have allowed our country to be taken over from within, and the end goal is you will have a homogenized world where we will become slaves, because there is a condition among the elites that really thinks they're better than you, deep down inside them, that you don't deserve the freedoms you have. They don't. This reality is what people need to wake up to, and we need to all unite working people. There's only one movement that can do that, And that is the movement that we started creating here in Massachusetts, the Movement for Truth, Freedom, and Health. Look, I've been a student of politics since I was a four-year-old kid, studying revolutionary movements, left-wing, right-wing. There's a physics, there's a nuclear science to destroying the establishment. To build a bridge, you need to understand Newton's equation. You need to understand the laws of gravity. You need to understand Poisson's ratio. There is a way to build a revolution. And that's why I put this together. My goal is to train an army of truth, freedom, and health leaders. We don't need followers like social media. We need leaders, but they need training because the educational system does not teach them history, nothing. So in 3 hours, that's what I've started doing. That's the solution. Wow. We got to train people first with understanding what a system is, the dynamics of all systems that affect nature. The second is understanding the interconnection between truth, freedom, and health. Freedom is the ability to move freely, communicate freely, talk freely. Without freedom, you cannot convert ideas, hypothesis into truth, which is science. And without freedom, you can't really get to truth. And without truth, you make up fake problems and fake solutions, which means you destroy our health. And without health, which is the infrastructure of us and our body, you can't fight for freedom. Truth, freedom, health. Third concept is it has to be bottoms up, working people, people who work uniting. And what the right wing has done is whenever you say working people unite, that must be communist. Meanwhile, they've let the Democrats run unions, which suppress workers, completely corrupt. But when you look at the arc of American history, it's been when working people came up. We need to go local. Every solution I'm coming up with is a part of this movement. We're giving the science, which is the truth, and then we tell people what they can do on the ground. Like with election fraud, you don't need to wait for some lawyer. Our goal is to train people to go local, to go local, to go local, fight locally. Forget lawyers, forget politicians, forget celebrities. You've got to learn politics, and there is a science to it. They lock us down, we should be ready to shut them down. And the fourth part of this principle is a not so obvious establishment. So when you look at a system, there's always something that disturbs you from getting to your goal. Well, the biggest disturbance is a not so obvious establishment, which are those people who claim they're for you on the left and the right. The Al Sharptons who tell black people I'm for you, the Tucker Carlsons. Do you think any true anti-establishment person will ever be on Fox or CNN? I don't think so. They both mislead working people back into the establishment. Without this solid understanding of political physics and theory, you're screwed. You're going to follow on the left wing Bernie Sanders. Oh, he said something. Or Robert Kennedy. Scumbags. Or you're going to follow some right-wing talk show host. They're not going to lead us to liberation. It's us. We're building a bottoms-up movement. And that political physics, it's a nuclear science of change. Bottoms up. We have to organize to understand that there is people who talk a good game and then look at what they actually do, left and right. I'm sorry, Sean Hannity may say some good things, but I don't see the urgency in his voice to get something done. And it can only come when you weaponize yourself with the right knowledge. You need to be able to identify a rat. You know, Christ didn't go after the Romans, right? It was the Pharisees and the Sadducees who screwed him up. His own quote-unquote people. And that's where we're at. So these four concepts I've built into a curriculum where people can go to truthfreedomhealth.com, and it's an educational program. We need to train people in political theory. You need to have physics, and I've created that curriculum. People need to get educated. We need to get educated fast. And within a half an hour, I can teach people 2 years of MIT control systems. I teach people those concepts. Then I apply it. Anyone can understand it. And then you say, oh, I got to build a bottoms-up movement. They have to get politically astute, and then they have to go locally and act, not sit there on social media. They have to act locally, defy locally, do civil obedience locally, but with knowledge on how to build a movement. Now, the Senate campaign's expanded to the Movement for Truth, Freedom, and Health, and they can find it on truthfreedomhealth.com, so people can sign in. They can get access to a bunch of videos. If they want to take a course and become a Truth, Freedom, Health leader, I offer a full scholarship there, but we want people to make a commitment that they'll study, that they'll get certified, that they'll go do activities on the ground. So go to truthfreedomhealth.com.
So the real issue here is there's not going to be any significant change in your life, my life, anyone's life, unless you actually understand the physics and you get organized. Those who fail to plan, plan to fail, right? So in the discussion I just had, one of the guys was you know, mistakenly thinking, he's a smart guy, but he's mistakenly thinking that when things get bad, suddenly things will change. It's not true. You actually have to build a movement. Like, you have to build anything you want in life. You have to set goals and you have to work at it. Things don't just happen because something happens. Something happens and something will happen in the direction that that something wants to happen, not because things spontaneously occur. This is a very, very mistaken view that the establishment wants you to have, and people just have these theoretical ideas. So this is why, you know, you want to get involved. If you're serious, we've created this institute, Truth Freedom Health Institute, where you can learn, you can be a leader, you can be part of this. We've made it very, very accessible to people. But as we grow, we're recognizing that we're going to get a little more particular on who really is serious about wanting to build a movement. Right now, we've made it open to everyone. So understand that each one of you has an extraordinary opportunity to expand your knowledge. Now, what's wonderful about education, unlike any other, you can go buy an iPhone, you can go buy a car. Most of those assets depreciate in value. But education is something that actually helps you appreciate in value, right? There's a reason people go get engineering degrees. There's a reason people go be plumbers or electricians, because that knowledge stays with you and you can grow wealth. And there's no other better wealth than learning how to liberate yourself, how to be healthy, et cetera. So Truth Freedom Health, we're giving this very powerful, concentrated knowledge for those who value education, those who are willing to let go of their ego, because we're building a global movement of people who want to raise their consciousness. And that's what education does. So recognizing the real power of real education is to advance knowledge. If you don't want to put your time and energy and your money in something like education, but you're willing to spend it on garbage, then it's a serious problem, because you're going to become enslaved. So recognize that's what we're doing. So get involved, get involved, get involved. Support the movement that we're building, which is really an educational movement. The second, the last part I want to end with is every Thursdays, it's a lot of time at 11 a.m. and at 8 p.m., we have an open house, vashiva.com/orientation. Join us, get involved, because you'll meet incredible people. Don't lose that opportunity to get educated, or you'll surely be enslaved. Anyway, thank you, everyone. I hope this discussion was valuable. But, you know, as we shared, the work I did inventing email didn't stop there. A lot of my work is now invested and heavily involved in revolutionizing medicine and supporting the liberation of all of us. So get involved, get involved, get involved. Be well, be the light. We need to build a bottoms-up movement. Go to shivaforpresident.com and volunteer.